Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 311. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I got up this morning even without an Apple Watch.
Graham Thickens.
And I got up with an Apple Watch.
And Phil Wilson with his Pebble Watch.
Yes, it's true. But that also sounded kind of like the beginning of that. Sounded sort of like the beginning of an Apple commercial. So
there you go.
How fitting.
Inspirational sort
Absolutely.
Of a thing. So. Absolutely. Welcome to Apple Talk, Men of 8.
It sounded like a jazzy version of Chopsticks, actually.
Really? You guys have no taste in jazz and blues. Come on.
Jazz and blues?
It's one of those.
I got my jazz easy listening. Credentials. Yeah. I was down in New Orleans, you know, for a family vacation.
Oh,
so
that's
I got a good dose of the real thing down there, man. Oh, my gosh. Are they good down there?
Yeah. So you sat there and listened to music while you're eating your crawdads?
It sounded insanely Minnesotan. Oh, yeah.
They're good down there.
They're good down there, yeah.
Them boys, they know how to do it.
Well, you're not only traveling to New Orleans, you've also been traveling around town, taking in a couple of events. Tell us what's been happening this last week.
Yes, I managed to get to at least a couple this week, one of which I posted about on Men of 8, and it was the SPS Commerce Annual Customer Conference, I guess you'd call it. And this year they called it Influence 15, and it was a two and a half day event, counting the parties and everything. I just caught the second day morning keynote from the VP of marketing, a guy named Peter Zabios, who I've met and heard speak before, and he's always pretty good. And he had a very good talk where he challenged the retailers in the audience to basically, you know, in not in these words, but like, get off your duffs and get onto this omnichannel thing, because they've determined from their own survey that over half of retailers haven't been able to get around to bothering with the whole omnichannel thing yet, because they're too busy being distracted by things like spreadsheets and, you know, 30-year-old technology like that.
For those uninitiated, what's SPS? What's SPS Commerce?
SPS Commerce is a cloud service for supply chain and serving the retail and commerce industries in a big way. It's probably grown 10 times in the last 10 years or so. It's now, what are they, Steve? Now they've got to be, I don't know, 600-800 employees or more, and well over 130 million annual revenues. So they have what they claim is the largest cloud service in Minnesota, because it's a big global network, basically a supply chain network, which focuses on so-called omni-channel retailing, or multi-channel is another older term.
Well, so all the keynotes and all the messages were to get you to buy more cloud service stuff, omni-channel stuff?
Well, it wasn't totally, you know, just their speakers. I mean, they had plenty of customers speaking and other luminaries.
Luminaries? Did you speak?
They had Joffrey Moore.
Did you speak though, Graham? Yeah. Graham, you didn't speak?
No.
Secondary luminaries then.
I just shut up and listened and wrote my story. He had some very good things to say and cited some really interesting statistics about what's going on in online commerce these days. So that was one that I went to, and you can read more about that. The other one that was the big happening of the week in Startupville here in Minnesota was the Lead Pages open house on Thursday evening.
Open house and free beer event.
Oh my God. Yeah. And you know how that
is. It was more of the under the influence talks. Yes, that was.
So they apparently capped it finally at 800 registrants. And it was like, that was too many. I mean, it was like backed up down the block and around the corner to just get into the building. And the line at the bar was so long that I was talking with Phil Soren. He said, I don't think anybody's going to get drunk tonight. It was like a long wait to get something to drink. But it went on from, I think it started at 6 and supposedly went to 10. And they stopped it at around 7 and did what they called a fireside chat, where Clay Collins moderated a talk with their two VCs, Seth Levine from Foundry Group in Boulder and Doug Burgum from Arthur Ventures. And they were quite good. They had a lot of great things to say and helped people understand more about why they chose to invest in Lead Pages, which is growing by leaps and bounds. And now is more than 100 employees, up from probably about 15 a year and a half ago. And I think they're already starting to get crowded in their new space there on the second floor on First Avenue North in, I think it's the 250 building, but a very nice space and a very nicely catered party. And, you know, everybody in the startup community was there except you guys.
But, yeah. Well, you know,
can't get to everything, dude.
Yeah. It's hard.
We don't want to spoil people in this market thinking that we're all going to cover an event.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. That would spoil them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd be spoiled by that.
If they start
that cursed, one of the two, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are my two main happenings this week. And, good stuff.
Very nice.
Excellent. Excellent.
In other news though, I noticed from Best Buy about embracing Apple Pay.
You know, this was a real stunning event, wasn't it? That they were just so adamant about not going with Apple Pay.
Well, they're going to still do currency. They're going to run Apple Pay and currency side by side. Half of this is not that surprising because Target already does support Apple Pay inside their iOS app for payment. And that's exactly what Best Buy is doing, but they're taking it one step further. And by the end of the year, they will support payments in stores with Apple Pay and with currency when that rolls out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll have to see what happens with
currency roll out.
Yeah. So I don't think currency is going to make it, but you know, but currency will work with other phones besides iPhones, and not everybody has an iPhone.
The question on everybody's mind, though, did Hubert Jolie make his millions and get paid via Apple Pay?
Probably not.
And how much was that number?
$8 million, which
$8 million.
Considering what he's done for the company, it's probably
kind of jump change.
Yeah, it's probably not terrible. But the guy that runs Target, what's his name? Cornell, the guy that they got from, what was it, Pepsi?
Pepsi. Pepsi.
Sounds like the place that minted John Scully, but I digress. $28 million. That is just obscene.
It is obscene.
Yeah, isn't that?
You know, this really bugs me, and this seems like it's not the new normal is that you've got these people that just make so much more money than everybody else, and there's what happened? I mean, it used to be like way back in the day that CEO made, I don't know, 20, 30 times what the regular employees made. Now they make 250, 350 times. That's just
Steve. Do you want to tell them?
Ridiculous.
Well, just know this: that there were 27 new billionaires minted in 2014, and that's double the number ever of newly minted in any given year.
Do we want to talk about the gap in the class?
No.
Do we want to go down that path, Tim?
This is a bugaboo of mine. I think it's obscene. There's no way that these people are worth it. I think that Hubert Jolie has done a great job and has probably well earned his $8 million. And that he, you know, someone in the Cornell basket, I have no problem with them making, you know, $30 million or $50 million, whatever. But it should be all stock. He should make a dollar a year just like Steve Jobs did when he came back.
Well, I think that's what
it took over Apple.
I think in most cases, that's the huge amount are the options.
Jolie. Tell that to the people that got laid off at Target.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
I'm glad we could pay the $28 million.
All right, we can move on. I've just
moving along.
I saw those this week, and I was just, I don't know. This makes me mad.
Yep, I understand. On the upside, Starkey Hearing Technologies won an Edison Award for their Halo technology. Did you see this, guys? I posted this link. I found this. I'm always fascinated what's going on over at Starkey Labs.
Yeah, they're a really interesting company, aren't they?
They really are. Explain
what Halo is and how it works with the iPhone and stuff.
Well, I couldn't tell you how it works with it's technology that marries the hearing aid to your iPhone and or to your smartphone.
Yeah, so, it uses it as the amplification device.
And it, you know, that allows for, you know, instant access streaming. I mean, imagine turning your hearing aids to be able to listen to your earbuds. That alone is kind of cool, if you ask me. But that's the sort of thing that is very interesting to me. And this is like the third or fourth Edison Award. Not really sure that Starkey has picked up.
So you're saying that this is the hearing aid we're all going to wear in 20 years?
Yeah, maybe so. What's that you say, son?
Yeah. No, let me turn it up on my iPhone.
Can't hear you over my Green Day.
Yeah. Yep. It's a big growing market.
It is huge. Julio was on last week and I wasn't on last week, but I'm sure there was a bit of Apple Watch talk. Am I right?
I think we talked a couple. Didn't we say something about it? I don't know.
I think so. Yeah. I think maybe a little bit. Yeah. So
how come he didn't talk to you, Grant?
Say again?
How come he didn't talk to you for this story?
Yeah, he's got a story on
because he's pissed that I got mine first, you know? I don't know.
No, I think it had to do with the fact that you were probably hungover and you couldn't take the call.
That's right.
From all those events you go to.
Well, when did he even write the story? I didn't get mine. 28th. Well, did he? So that was did he know I got mine on the 29th? I don't.
Oh, okay.
And unless he saw my Twitter.
Got it. Yeah.
He talked to some folks that had access probably early on. I know that I'm sure Space 150 got the opportunity to pick up a dev edition and that sort of thing. Just because you get expedited shipping if you're a developer.
Right.
They had a small lottery that you could do that with. So,
well, what's surprising here is that no one's like raving about it. They're kind of like, it's okay. You know, it's pretty good.
I don't know. I don't remember where the review I read. Was it on The Verge or I can't remember, but that was a pretty rave review.
Yeah, no, most of the early reviews have been very positive, but they all kind of point out like, I don't know. You don't really need this or whatever. But what is it really like to use it, Graham?
Well, you know, I've only had it for a couple of days, and I haven't worn it all day, every day, each of those days. I'm not ready to give a full review of it by any stretch, you know.
Graham, did you wear a watch before you got the Apple Watch? You wear one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. And I mean, I love it, and it works great, and the experience is wonderful, and the interface is great. I'm not unhappy with the smaller 38-millimeter version. I hemmed and hawed about that, but I just did not want a big honking thing on my wrist, and I'm glad I didn't get the big one.
It looks pretty good. I mean, I saw your picture, and it doesn't look small at all. It looks like about the right size.
Right. Yeah, it is.
We got the larger one at the office, and it just seems, I thought it was a little, even the large one was a little smaller than I expected, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
You're used to the Pebble though.
Well, no, I think it's a little bit bigger than the Pebble. That's kind of an unfair comparison. The Pebble seems very much like a shop project compared to the Apple Watch. And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way because, stuff. Well, and again, this was the original Pebble, not the Pebble Steel or any of the new updated versions. This is still my Kickstarter Pebble. So probably an unfair comparison, especially when it comes to the screen. Egad. So,
Yeah, but the this thing is really a fine piece of technology. I mean, I love every aspect of it, and but I haven't been getting a lot of notifications lately, so I haven't really been able to, I did call Steve from it though. That's the first thing I did when I got in the car for the first time with the watch, and I thought, I got to call Borsch.
I thought it sounded really great, actually.
Yeah. I did a Dick Tracy phone call.
I was going to say, was it like talking to Dick Tracy?
Yeah, that's what I felt like. But, and I'm wondering, are the cops going to see me holding my wrist up to my mouth and pull me over or what? But I guess it's legal to be making phone calls from your watch. It's legal to make them from your phone. So anyway, but the band is great. I was telling Steve, the biggest thing is I tore into the box and I didn't open everything. And I went to put the band on and I thought, oh my gosh, is this 38 millimeter sized for ladies? And the band, it was like I was on the last hole and it was still a little too tight. And I thought, oh crap, I'm going to have to get another band. And then a little later, I was pulling out the little manual or flyer that comes with it. And there's a card in there that has the half of the band with the longer half with more holes in it. I thought, yep. Oh, thank God, So once I switched to that, then I had a man-sized,
How band. Difficult was it to switch the band?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievably easy. There's a little thing you push on the back and just slide it out one side and then slide in the new one. It's engineered extremely well.
You don't have to worry about that. If you've ever changed a watch band, they always that risk of shooting that pin across the room and never,
never see it again.
Those things are a pain. This is really, really nice. And I love the stainless. I love the fact that it's sapphire glass and I shouldn't be having any trouble with scratching it unless somebody runs a diamond across it or something. And I got all my apps on there that I want. You can, when you're setting it up, you can have all your apps put over on it. And I thought, no, I don't want to do that because I don't know how many apps. I have scores and scores of apps on my phone. But, you pair it to your phone, and that doesn't take very long. And then you can put just the apps you want onto the phone. So, I put Flipboard and I put, Twitter. I'm not enjoying Twitter all that much because all it's giving me is my timeline and what's trending. And I don't really give a crap about what's trending. I really don't. And my timeline, I have like 5,600 people I'm following, and I really, to be quite honest with you, I don't look at my timeline. I don't look at my, home or whatever you want to call it, my main timeline. I use lists, so I can focus in on just the people I'm really interested in following, so subsets of my entire timeline. And I can't do that on the Twitter app, at least now.
The great thing is as a stockholder, it's good to see that according to reports, it only costs what? It's like 24% of the retail price to build it. So 75 point markup. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah. That's a sport watch. So presumably the stainless steel costs somewhat more than 80. What is it? $83.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, but,
getting back to the Twitter thing, Graham, I've heard on other podcasts that Twitterific has a better, watch app than the other ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I should put my Twitterific app over to the watch. I haven't done that yet. But I will. Yep. For sure.
And then you rush right out and gold plate it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you guys see this?
Only $300 this weekend. Get it while you can.
So for what they're talking about, everybody, there is a company called watchplate.com that will gold plate your Apple Watch for $399. And, of course, it's on sale, right, just this weekend.
Yeah, but it's stainless steel on stainless up. You can't gold plate your sport watch.
Right. But
I just wonder what it would look like, though, and what kind of quality it would be. And, is it going to.
Well, most of the watches on the market are gold plate. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it looked great. I think, you know, at least from the pictures, it looks killer. And then you throw in that nice, that band that they have. What do they call that band, guys?
Milanese Loop.
Milanese.
Yeah, it's the mesh one. The mesh one, yeah. I call it.
Yes, the chain mail.
I bet they gold plate a lot of those for the legitimate gold ones.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have a gold band except
if
you're a famous singer, you know, you can have it.
Yeah.
You know, I have to admit that I thought this was funny. You know, that
Beyonce has one.
Because you know the supposed, you know, when iFixit did a teardown on the Apple Watch, they determined that the cost of the components was $89.
Right.
Now that doesn't have anything to do with the assembly and packaging and shipping and all of that.
Well, the package is about $103. So
the
packaging is excessive. It's just excessive. Yeah.
Well, but there's a charger in there and everything else. Anyway, the point is,
it comes with this plastic case that to put it in, but you'll never put it in there because you always have to have it on the charger. I mean, it's a plastic box inside the usual, you know, vacuum sealed cardboard box.
And but that's,
it's
just, but that's a lot how of watches are shipped.
Come that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of watches are packaged that way. So they kind of have to do that to, you know, be with the program. Well,
but the kicker is, I remember living in Chicago and there was a guy there who was a regional manager, and that's what I was. And he really thought that he was a big deal because he had been a manufacturer's rep. And then when Pioneer went direct, he went to work for Pioneer. And, you know, he drove a real high end Mercedes and he thought he was just God's gift to women and all that. Well, he had a Rolex.
Sounds like, Steve, that sounds like you.
Yeah,
what are you talking?
Like me, right. Yeah. and he had this real Rolex. Well, I went out to New York for an event. And while I was there, I bought a Rolex on the street, you know, just a quartz movement, you know, came back and held it up next to his. And the only thing you could tell with a real Rolex, of course, is it had a sweep second hand, but otherwise you couldn't tell. And he was really visibly upset. Of course, then I was sitting around a conference table with a client and I was gesticulating and I hit my elbow on the conference table and the crystal fell.
Watch blew up.
Yeah. All of a sudden, ding, 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 ding. I said, boy, they don't make these fake Rolexes like they used to. And I threw it in my briefcase, but oh man.
Well, fake Apple Watches are out there too, so it could happen to other people.
Yeah.
So everybody's talking about how, you know, they've all, you know, Graham, obviously a very special human being, gets his watch fairly quickly, but the rest of us are still waiting for ours. But a lot of that big news is that story broke. I think it broke on Thursday about there was a faulty component in some of the watches that had to be turned back and not
taptic engine.
A little taptic engine problem.
Yeah.
Well, no, none were ever shipped with.
No, they say that some might have gotten out. So they're not.
But mostly it's slowing down the shipping.
Yeah. But, you know, and then they had a backup supplier, which is how a good supply chain company does things. And now they've already fired up an additional supplier of the haptic engine. So
there will.
So yeah, they. Yeah, they got caught with a bad, you know, but testing discovered it. And, you know, what I read is that they didn't ship any. But I guess Gruber had to send one back. But was his a bad haptic engine or not?
Yep. There was a couple of reports of some of the guys with watches that were having haptic.
Yeah. And those would have been people that had really early, you know, those would have been pre-production models. I mean, the April.
Graham, I got to tell you, just get over it. It happens.
I got to tell you that I was real. I was really pissed off though about the fact that I was just about to go out and get a full left arm sleeve tattoo.
Yes,
and that's right where I'd have my Apple Watch. But apparently, the people have found that their inked skin confuses the sensors on the underside of the Apple Watch.
You just have to go in when you get your sleeve, Steve. Just make sure they leave that spot for your Apple Watch.
Exactly. I would, but it'll look bad. It'll ruin the design. I was just upset.
Dragons. You went with dragons, didn't you?
No, I was, a woman I dated when I was in my teens named Shirley.
And masturbating cherubs. I got you.
Oh my God. Anyway.
So, Anywho, I'm kind of excited to get one. I did try the one on that we got for the shop, and it was really, it's a nice looking watch. It really is.
Yeah.
So it's Graham. Tell me about the one thing that I noticed, one of the developers is wearing it fairly full time just to, get a vibe on it. It does seem like the little, motion detector that turns the face on when you lift it to look at the time doesn't always do that. So you have to repeat the motion.
I haven't noticed it not doing it, but you do have to lift it up and turn it towards, it's a bit of an effort to do that. When you're used to just glancing down at the time.
I wonder what the impact is on the battery. I would imagine you can lock that screen on, couldn't you? So you could always see the watch.
I tried to do that, and it seemed like there was a setting to do that, but I wasn't able to have it to get it to stay on all the time.
I wonder what that would do to battery life.
Well, I'm sure it would take it down a lot faster. So, but I thought I'd try it just for the heck of it. But you do have to raise your wrist, and I have to kind of turn it towards me the way my wrist works. I've not had any trouble in having it come on instantly when I do that. Mm-hmm. So I can see my Mickey. I like Mickey.
Oh, you're using the Mickey face?
Yeah, I've been doing the Mickey thing. Yeah.
So, that's the one thing I've always liked about the Pebble. The Pebble it dims the screen. You can always see the face on it, but it will, when you do lift to look at it, it does light up quite easily. I've always been kind of impressed with that. So I'm kind of curious to see what that's like.
Yeah, it probably would be a slightly different experience than what you're used to in that respect, but they're going for the long battery life, and weren't people saying they were getting it, like Walt Mossberg and some of the other early reviewers, I think we're getting 8 or 10 hours, weren't they?
Mm.
Well,
still not enough.
You put a picture of this.
Oh,
on
it is
Instagram.
For my day.
You got a short day.
Well, I don't wear a watch. I don't wear a watch longer than that. And I'm happy to take it off at the end of the day. And I might not put it on until I've been up for 3 hours or so. I don't put it on the instant I get up in the morning by any stretch. So, 8 to 10 hours is fine for me. So I'm not worried about that. And I could always, charge it midday too, if I needed to, but then, I work mostly at home and I have my charger available. I'm probably not going to haul my watch charger around with me when I'm out and around, but you could, it's not that bulky.
That wraps up this edition of Apple Watch Talk.
Well, we should say one more thing. We should say one more thing about our pals at Apple, though, because I thought this was a very interesting partnership with IBM there and Japan Post, the postal service. They are offering an elder support service with iPads loaded with apps that are specific for elder care. Or for elder use, so big touchscreen buttons and phone and stuff about their health and yada, yada, yada. And I thought this was pretty interesting because, obviously Japan's culture is aging dramatically, or their culture, their population is getting quite old. And ours is too. I mean, there'll be 75 million retired baby boomers by 2026. So, this will be
never
a very,
gonna make it. Never gonna
very
make
interesting
it.
Thing. Well, I mean, with HealthKit, it'll be real interesting to see if they can really manage, to integrate the Apple Watch well with something like this. So you could, do heart rate and all kinds of other stuff with the sensors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, so. I think that'll be one of the big applications will be, monitoring of patients. Health using these Apple Watches and others that will be out there doing similar kinds of things.
Right.
So I think that's a really big unsung story at this point, but we'll see it evolve as developers make apps that take advantage of that. And I think Mayo is going to going to be at the forefront of that. That's what it sounds.
Right, right. Well, I don't know about you guys, but have you guys bought Microsoft stock?
You have. I know that.
Well, I bought
three or four shares.
No, a couple hundred or 250 shares a while back, and it was in the upper 20s.
Yeah.
And
where's it at now?
So I think it closed at 43.25.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's moving in the right direction. There's no question about it. But I will tell you that this event this week for developers was very interesting. And you know, for example, they've got a tool for cross-platform app development that is getting some pretty interesting reviews, and that they're shooting for 1 billion devices running Windows 10.
Complete with the Microsoft Edge, right?
That's what they're calling
Explorer.
The new name for, it used to be called Spartan. Now it's Edge.
It's Edge.
Yeah.
I like kind of Spartan sounds better, but whatever.
It is. Yeah. But,
Well, one thing that wasn't clear to me, and I don't know about you guys, but are they using Project Spartan as the foundation for their delivery of apps? I mean, is that sort of the runtime engine, or is it just a web browser?
I think it's just a web browser, isn't it?
It's just a browser. Yeah.
Okay. It's going to replace Internet Exploder.
Yeah. All right.
Well, and I think they changed it to Edge simply because they got a good deal on E. they could just take the current logo and modify it a little bit. So a little less money than developing a whole new logo for Spartan.
Oh, I see.
Did you see that? There's a story about they just sort of hacked the E a little bit to make it look hipper and cooler.
Well, Microsoft closed at $48.65 yesterday.
Nice.
So yeah. And everybody thought I was absolutely insane to buy Microsoft, but you know, I thought,
They're doing the right things right now, and I think that the Windows 10 will be very successful for them.
Right.
They're taking a different path than Apple and Google, and you know, it looks like it's got a real shot at commercial success.
Yep.
Then this HoloLens thing looks also very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I haven't really gotten into
which is
that
their
much, but.
It's their virtual reality thing. So I'm sure that Chuck Olson will be all over this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will tell you that I'd seen this article because I've got a Google News RSS feed, so I get a lot of the Google News. But this IBM quantum computing breakthrough was a big deal. They've figured out how to measure the two types of quantum errors, and so now they can build error correction into quantum computing, which is going to be fundamental, obviously, for results you can count on. But I don't normally science point to boing boing posts, but this particular one had a really some really great links in it to stuff like, you know, 7 awesome ways quantum computers will change the world, and it had in it one of the best explanations ever for why quantum computing will be such a big deal. And one of the analogies they drew is, imagine that you had to go and look for one specific sentence in a book that exists in the Library of Congress, and there are 15 million books. Well, if you're one person going in there, it's impossible. You'll never be able to go through all the books in your lifetime to scan through them and look for this one phrase. But in a quantum computing world, you could have 15 million of you all looking at one book, and it would happen simultaneously. And so that's the power of quantum computing. And of course, that's also why another story that we're going to talk about on what Congress is doing to look at putting back doors into stuff isn't going to really matter, because we're going to be able to break some pretty strong encryption with quantum computers. Not that our local police stations will have one, but anyway, this was a really big deal announcement. There's a lot of excitement about it, so I thought I'd throw that in. But did you guys
computer
watch
science?
Like this, everybody just started.
Yeah, everybody's like, okay, all right. All right. So there was this whole debate in Congress. You know, the House is looking at potentially driving forward with bills on putting back doors and stuff. And they were specifically slamming Apple and Google on putting stronger encryption in the phones. And it was a really, really interesting debate. But the best part was Representative Ted Lieu from California, who, basically said, look, I have a computer science degree, and encryption backdoors are technologically stupid. And, he's going on and on about just follow the damn Constitution. And really, Apple and Google did this in reaction to government overreach on surveillance. And it's really, if you want to carve out the time and watch the video, it's really worth it to listen to the debate. Cause it is, I mean, there's valid stuff on both sides, but putting a back door in is not the answer, or having a special key and public key cryptography that only the government has. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, that's going to stay a secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Follow the damn Constitution.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
Let's see. What else is happening, kids? Let's see.
We missed the horses last week.
That's right. We didn't do horses last. You guys didn't.
Yeah, I called for them, but the barn door was closed.
Okay. Well, let's see if what's going on with the horses.
It is time for Steve's security tip of the week.
Wow.
So there were horses and there were an ooh. So just so you know. So
sounds what's like they're on a ooh, mission.
Ooh? Yeah, the ooh. Anyway. All right. So
I don't know what was the matter with the original, I don't know why you want to play around with that iconic intro. Why do you want to
just
play?
Just to be different.
That's like messing with the NBC chimes, dude.
Seriously? All right. All right. So here's my tip of the week. Consider using a script blocker in your browser.
Okay.
And the most famous one is NoScript for Firefox. And I will tell you right out of the gate that for the first, 4 or 5 days that you use it, you're going to be saying, God, did I really put this in because of that stupid Borscht's security tip of the week? And the answer is, yeah, once you train it to be okay with the site you're going to, or you allow scripts from certain things, it just all of a sudden it goes away. It seems to go away anyway. But it won't allow malicious malware sites to run JavaScript or even run Flash without your okay.
I like this
and,
idea.
And again, it is a pain in the ass to for the first, probably the first week that you're using it. But just keep doing it and it'll get easier and easier and easier. I've been running NoScript now for, 4 or 5 years. And the only downside is when I switched from Chrome to Firefox, I had to retrain Firefox. And then I also had to retrain, because I don't have sync set up on purpose.
Why did you switch back to Firefox from Chrome?
Because I was having problems with Chrome. It was just bloating up to the point where I just would do things like clear the cache, and it wasn't clearing the cache properly, and just stuff like that. It just got to be too unwieldy. So I went back to Firefox, and so far it's okay.
We'll need to fix that link in there for the Chrome not scripts, because it doesn't resolve to not scripts.
So I'll find that. Yeah.
I can't even find it in the store. So.
Oh, really?
No, I can't. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, anyway, we'll get something.
Yeah. It'll learn from your habits and all of that. So, that's my tip.
Wonderful tip. As always.
So I want to know, what are
the cool things of the week?
This has become my favorite thing of the whole show, just because I just love what you guys come up with. So who wants to go first?
Tim.
All right. Well, you know that I like the Raspberry Pi, and I like the Arduino. Yes. And there's these crazy guys in Italy that have come up with a mashup that they call the Udo Neo. And basically, it's a single board computer that combines an Arduino, a Raspberry Pi, a bunch of sensors, onboard Wi-Fi, and onboard Bluetooth. So you don't have to plug in USB versions of those things. And I think it makes an ultimate sort of Internet of Things single board computer here. Because
that's a really nice deal. Very cool. Yeah.
It is, and they've blown past their Kickstarter goal, which was only $15,000, and that they're at $112,000 right now with 33 days to go. So this has a lot of uptake, and I think it's, what is it, $45?
$49.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for $50, you get actually a very nice little system, you know, that I think Arduinos are what you can get it for, what, about $15-$20 now?
Yeah, but then you got to add everything to it.
No, I know. And just look at the bulk that, I mean, it looks just like a Raspberry Pi, but it's got all this stuff already in it.
It's missing a spark.
Well, maybe the version 2 will have a spark.
Yeah.
There you go.
But isn't spark just a, kind of like an Arduino with the Wi-Fi built into it?
I don't know. Yeah, it's always, yeah.
Well, but it's a platform, though, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this already has that. So,
yeah.
So it's,
well, and plus the fact, if you go all the way down at the bottom, you can see that you can also get a t-shirt and mouse pads.
Oh, well, that's
oh, the thing. That's yeah, the thing. Yeah. So, sure. I mean, well, the thing that really, I mean, there are other projects that have add-ons where you can add an Arduino onto an existing Raspberry Pi using the expansion pins. This integrates it in. But it also puts these sensors in, which gives you all sorts of information that you can't get any other way. So that's the part that I thought was very innovative.
Well, what I thought was great was the 9-axis motion sensors.
Yeah,
that's to build your perfect drone, robot, 3D printers, whatever, or create new kinds of interactions with the real world.
Yep.
You know, honest to God, just imagine the kinds of stuff that people are going to build, and what the world's going to look like in 5 years. Of course, what'll happen is you'll probably go for a walk with your wife and there'll be drones buzzing you to see what you're doing. It'll just be nuts.
These would be great boards for schools to have. So if where they're teaching kids programming and, you know, other computer science types of things, you can do a lot with this. This is like a Heathkit sort of a deal.
Yeah.
It runs our Android and Linux. So you can do just about anything you can imagine with this thing.
Cool.
So
good, good, good.
That is my cool thing this week.
Mr. Thickens.
Yeah. Well, mine is more like the funny thing of the week. A couple of Georgia Tech computer science students came up with a random startup website generator. It's pretty hilarious.
That's great.
It's like, do you guys, are you the same as me when you're looking at all these new startups websites? Don't they look, so many of them look so much alike?
Oh yeah.
And you know, and they're all just full of jargon and stuff. And you know, I don't know if a lot of them are using the same WordPress theme. They must be, because they all just start blending into one another. Well, these guys have carried it to the extreme. And there was an article in, I guess it's what, Network World, that gives a few examples. Like there's every time you refresh the site, it shows you a different one. So there's one called Phonester, which is a place for people who enjoy phoning to connect. And then there's another startup called Rememberable. We're remembering to sustain things that matter.
Yeah, how about Valuely was founded by people who love valuing just like you.
Right. It's just hilarious, you know. And I guess there have been these kinds of things done before, I think. But this one is particularly up to speed with where a lot of the sites are going these days, you know.
It's Snowster.
It's worth Here's taking one. A look.
Snowster. Snowing just got a whole lot better.
Well, see, what's great about this is they're using Bootstrap as the web engine for WordPress. So they probably just programmatically can spawn a new site with whatever you put in. Yeah, this
Pot
is,
link.
Yeah, this is great.
Pot link. The late, the last word in exclusive pots.
Yeah. How I mean, funny. it's definitely worth playing with. It's fun, you know. We gotta poke fun at startup lingo, I guess, just like corporate jargon. You know, it's becoming a little tedious from time to time, you know?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's my fun thing of the week.
Very cool. Very cool.
One last one. Potator. The potato you've been waiting for. Share your favorite potatoes and discover new ones.
Oh, there's got to be a business model behind that. You can monetize that. Don't ask me how, but
here's a quote from Stella Southwick, Buffalo, New York. We've tried every potato program available. Potato was the easiest to set up and the most effective.
Have you noticed that they have these chief, the chiefs are like CHO or CWO, and they're like, what? CJO.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God.
CX. I was skeptical at first, but potato really came through.
Oh my God.
All right. This is brilliant. I love it.
Mr. Phil.
Yep.
This was actually a news item, but I thought this was really cool. Elon Musk announced the Tesla Powerwall, basically moving their battery technology from under their car to on the wall of your garage to help reduce your power costs. This looked really interesting to me, you know, the ability to basically charge up the batteries in this beast with solar power so that you could disconnect from the grid if you needed, you know, for short periods of time. So, it struck me as not too bad of a price point, $3,500.
Well, that's for the 10 kilowatt, but I stayed up and watched it, you know, it was supposed to be on at 11 PM. Eastern time.
Elon left you hanging.
Well, left me hanging. He didn't start until 25 after 11 Central time.
Wow.
And then the thing was 20 minutes. And, you know, I really am impressed and think the world of Elon Musk. I mean, he's just, an amazing inventor and a guy that actually gets stuff done.
But a bit of a rude bastard is what you're saying?
No, not that. But it was, as I watched the thing, I felt like I was sitting with one of my buddies who was kind of doing a dry run through his VC pitch. Cause people are yelling stuff from the audience and he's kind of interacting with them. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the Powerwall page. The point though is that this sparked a discussion the next morning with my wife about the fact that we've been talking about getting either a portable generator or a natural gas power generator for our house. Cause we've had power outages here in Eden Prairie and we used to have a ton of them until they did some work. But this is a really interesting model. What I thought was really interesting, watch the video. It's only 17 or 18 minutes and it goes through, how many if we had this many and, batteries, powering, and if we had this many in the world and so on, you know, it's like 16 million in the world that we would totally be off fossil fuels. And I thought that was really an interesting,
it has a 10 year lifespan guarantee.
Yep.
Which is interesting. You know, the question still remains as it does with any non-fossil fuel is what do we do with the waste? I mean, nuclear waste something you always have to worry about. Where do you store the waste from these sorts of things? And eventually, you know, what do you do with the components of a battery after its 10-year lifespan?
Recycle
them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. But of course the price doesn't include the solar hookup, right? You have to be able to, you have to connect some panels of some kind. Well, yes.
Doesn't this work without solar too?
It can work without solar. Yes.
Yeah, you can store it. So if you're in California where Pacific Gas and Electric has lower rates at I think 12:30 a.m. till 4 a.m.
Middle of the night. Yeah. So you'll recharge it at that time.
Bingo. Well, that's what people do with their electric cars. You know, they just set the schedule to start charging when the rates are the lowest. Mm-hmm. And they charge them up. So
I still think the purest form of this is hooking it up to solar power. So,
well, there's no question. Do you know the, God, doggone it. He used to play on, St. Elsewhere. He was a doctor,
Ed Begley Jr.
Ed Begley Jr. You know, he's a huge sustainable, he's a vegan and all this kind of stuff. And he was giving a talk about his electric car. Now he was in that movie, Who Killed the Electric Car? Because he had
the original one.
Yep, he had one of the original ones from General Motors, and Begley just got slammed. I mean, literally, a guy stood up in the middle of his presentation and started slamming him about the fact that he was charging electric cars with carbon-based electricity, carbon-fueled electricity, and he got so much crap that he decided that he was going to go do solar panels to charge a battery array in his garage. And he had a whole shitload of lead acid batteries, and he had to have a computer so they wouldn't all discharge too far. And I mean, he had to condition the batteries and blah, 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 blah. All that's taken care of with Tesla. And So I would say he's going to be a guy that's what he does, is he charges up electricity and from solar, and solar has finally reached a tipping point where, the yield from these solar panels is so good that we're right now at the tipping point where it's becoming more affordable than carbon-based fuel generation. So won't that be cool if that tips?
Mm-hmm. It's still not as good as nuclear, though.
No.
And not I was nearly.
Kinda, yeah, where's the Kickstarter program for a...
They have these what they call neighborhood nukes, and literally they can power a neighborhood, and it uses its own fuel, so there's no waste. I mean, it recycles its own fuel. So
Bill Gates has invested in the company that's primary to that called TerraPower, and that's exactly what they do. And yeah, it's got can power 1,000 homes for 10 years, and then when it's done, you just recycle the waste.
Didn't TerraPower also get a government grant? I'm trying to remember if that were one of them.
There's a good documentary on Netflix about this, and there's all sorts of people that were hippies that were against nukes back in the 70s and all that stuff.
Like Stuart Brand.
Yeah, that are back and saying this is the way to go. And it's very convincing. So, you know, hopefully between solar and nuclear and wind, we can get off, the oil thing. Because oil for all of the problems with the environment, it's just, I think it generates more strife and political problems in the world just because of, where it comes from.
Yeah. Probably that's why we're in the Middle East. So.
Yeah. And Canada too. Those Canadians.
Those Canucks. I know. All right, Steve. What is your thing of the week? Your cool thing.
What cool thing? I'm kidding.
You have a cool thing, don't you?
Yeah, my cool thing is it's set up, but it's now on the dining room table till I can finish this podcast today and then tear down my office and rewire things so that it works perfectly. But it's the Varidesk Standing Desk Pro Plus. It's a 48-inch wide stand-up desk, and I tried one of these out. I he's not really a buddy, but he's a good acquaintance of mine who has one. And the cool thing about it is that you literally just reach down and squeeze these handles on either side, and you can lift the whole desk up, and now it's a standing desk.
Yep.
And if you decide to sit down, you squeeze them again and put it down. And I just got to the point where I just can't do what I do, which is sometimes I'm so focused on what I'm doing that 3 hours later, I'm like, God, my butt's sore. It's because I've been just literally haven't moved for 3 hours.
So you could probably rig something that you and Steve need to get together, or excuse me, you and Tim need to get together, Steve, because basically when you get your Apple Watch and it reminds you to stand, maybe you could put together some sort of a Raspberry Pi mechanism that makes your desk go up and make you stand whenever that prompt comes.
That's right.
And you'd be typing along, and all of a sudden your desk will hit you in the chin.
An Arduino would be better for that application.
Oh, okay, there you go, an Arduino then.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to run a little server on it. It'd have to create a you know, like one of those if then and that events that from the watch or from your phone to the Arduino. And then,
But yeah, I think
there
no price is too high to pay to get Steve off his ass. I think this is really,
well, you know what, in all seriousness, I mean, you know, besides the fact that, you know, it's, you know, the buzz is that sitting is the new smoking.
Right.
And I do buy into that. Well, but look at the fact
Come on. There's no way that sitting is worse than smoking.
No, I know. But it is.
So what you're sitting in
is sells down.
Yeah. But it is incredibly bad for you. And
well, once you get that Apple Watch though, it's going to remind you to stand every hour.
Yeah, you'll
you know
fun.
What? I have an app on my Mac that I don't use anymore because it did the same thing, but I'd be right in the middle of something.
I'm busy.
And it would it would be like, and so I'd turn it off. All right. Tell it to pause. I wouldn't get up. And, so that didn't work. The thing is I've done the stand up desk thing on a couple of different occasions. And even the first day I stood up for 2.5 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon. And then, it was a non-issue. I felt great. People always complain, oh, my back was so sore and all that. Well, if you stand on one of those cushy mats and you got a pair of shoes on, you know, you don't stand there barefoot. You're fine.
Yep. My, one of our guys has one of those at the office. It's just
a Veradesk.
Yes. And everybody's sort of jealous cause they all kind of want one. We have standing desks, you know, the crank up standing desks, but, this is really, it's a convenient sort of way to, convert your own desk. And, you know, $400 is what the retail price is on them. And
$100 for shipping, unfortunately.
But at the same time,
heavy.
I think that the average stand-up desk is around $500. So whether that's, I know that IKEA has one that's like $489 that's electric, and the crank ones we have are probably about the same price. So it's still a fairly good value. My concern is always being a tall guy if it goes up high enough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good point.
And this runs, 17.5 inches off the desktop? So
I don't know. All I know is that it was just perfect for me. And the big thing that I wanted was, I haven't done it yet because I've got this Retina iMac and there aren't really good Retina displays. There's the Dell's got a 5K display, but, there's not, it doesn't work well with the Mac yet and so forth. So I'm kind of waiting for that. And for now I'll just have my MacBook and my iMac set up on this thing. Yep. But then eventually I'll have my second display. And it'll work great.
Very nice. Plus,
when you do voiceover work or interviews or anything like that, it's your energy level is much different when you're standing.
Especially if you have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that gets a good look at the cool thing of the week.
Yeah. So what events are we...
Well, you know, we always put the podcast in the can on Saturday. Tomorrow, May 3rd, is the Appapalooza, which is the culmination of the Technovation Challenge for Technovation MN. That baby is sold out at the convention center. It is very, it's packed. So we'll have a lot of folks down there checking out what the result of all the teams of young women have built for apps. So check that out.
Nice.
And then, who's doing the website challenge? Who's going?
Nah, not me.
Can't.
Silence, crickets.
I know.
Well, you know, do we want to go over there and broadcast it or podcast it?
Show up. I don't know. Maybe.
Kind of fun. Yeah.
Might be.
And then anything else? What else? Looks like we have a couple of other things.
Well,
the
MHTA spring conference, I'm looking forward to that.
You are?
Yeah, I'm going
to. Yeah, it should be good.
You're going?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh. And then the following week, a bunch of stuff, or I guess a couple weeks out, beta.mn on the 14th, and the Geekettes All Women Hackathon, May 16, 17, at Lead Pages. And then I'm going up to Fargo for two events on May 20th, 21st. So I'm looking forward to that. Arthur Ventures has their annual Cultivate You event to energize and unleash the inner entrepreneur in you.
Hmm.
And that's immediately followed by the Midwest Mobile Summit on the afternoon of the 20th and all day the 21st. Yep. They always have a good turnout up there. You've been up there, Phil.
Yep, I'll be going right? up again. Yep.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, well, you know, and I probably got to arrange carpooling with somebody or to get somebody to ride along with me because that's a long, lonely drive.
That's our, vice president of mobile from BuzzFeed is keynoting. So
nice.
Oh,
on en masse. There you go.
Well, I really wanted to go to SolidCon out in San Francisco. O'Reilly's doing this Internet of Things event called SolidCon.
Oh, okay.
And they basically pointed out to me that since we're a community-based publication, that I'm not eligible for a press pass. And an all-access pass is $2,045.
Oh, that's crazy. They should be giving you a pass. You know, every once in a while, you get these people that are running the press registrations that are Nazis, you know, and you have to like bend over backwards to show them all kinds of stats and stories. And gosh, with all you've written on IoT, they wouldn't give you a press pass.
Yeah, I know. Well, jeez. I'm still working on it, so they're on my
crap list now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Keep on them.
Yeah, I'd really like to go. But anyway,
there you go. Well, there's lots going on, lots to look forward to, and we'll talk about it next week on
the Men of 8 Gang podcast. Take care, boys.
Yeah. Have a good week.
Have a great weekend.